Hi, welcome to Forever Paranormal with Dr. Bill and Deb. The term paranormal refers to phenomena and experiences that are beyond the scope of normal scientific understanding and cannot be easily explained through traditional scientific principles. These phenomena often challenge conventional beliefs and are associated with the supernatural, metaphysical, or unexplained aspects of reality. As with any field of inquiry, it is essential to approach the paranormal with an open but critical mind, relying on empirical evidence and logical reasoning to draw conclusions. It's a topic that continues to intrigue and challenge both believers and skeptics alike, and if we can connect a paranormal element to it, we'll talk about it. You'll be surprised by what all can be connected to the paranormal. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and share the show, since it would not be possible without you, our listeners. And as a public service, we would like to let everyone know that you are truly never alone, even if you think you are. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is 988. Please just reach out. Well, hello there, and welcome to this week's episode. This week, we are going to talk about the Demon House, but we are going to look at what started it all, the Ammons family possessions. Hi, Miss Deb. How's my fabulous co-host doing this week?
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. So you're good?
I'm good.
All right. Well, I know last week you struggled trying to find anything cool and worthy in the news, but did you have any success this week?
Sure did. I doubt that there exists a human being that did not at one time or another wish they could be invisible.
Oh, you're right on that.
Right. Well, much to my surprise, there actually are such things as invisibility cloaks and shields for real people. It's not just the military anymore.
All right. So this is not like Harry Potter book stuff, right? It's real.
It's kind of sort of like Harry Potter. Huh. But yes, it's real. So I found a shield that has actually been for sale for a few years by a company called the Invisibility Shield Company. Now, granted, it's small. I think it's 17 inches tall. But the 2.0 version that will be coming out ranges all the way up to 6 feet tall. Apparently, they work by first diffusing ambient light reflected by the user that's behind the screen across the front of the screen, and then it diffuses the user's background light across the front of the screen, so the viewer would then just see what's in the background light.
Hmm.
Kind of sounds like a magic trick, but yeah. No, the concept of using material to bend light dates back to the 1960s from what I could find.
Huh.
There have been countless different theories, experiments, universities, scientists delving into this subject. There's too many to discuss here. So as a former wallflower, I like the prospect of choosing my social experience for the day as I walk out the door. Bright red jacket or invisibility cloak. Look out, world.
Wow, yeah, cool. But, you know, I've got to ask this question. Do you have any idea what they might cost? Because this is definitely going on my list to Santa Claus this year.
The smaller one would be about $68.
Huh, that's pretty cheap.
And I think it goes all the way up to $500 to $700. I don't remember if that was pounds or dollars.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
But it ranges all the way up to, I think, $700.
But you know, you talk about reflecting light and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think of Bigfoot. Because they say he disappears and stuff. And so maybe his fur can refract light. That's a cool concept, isn't it?
Maybe it's made of the right kind of
material. Right kind of material, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. So we're going to move on, though, because I can't hide behind my invisibility cloak here. So we got to do this episode. So, folks, I'm sure most of you have heard about the Demon House, since it was a documentary by the same name, which was released in 2018 by Zach Bagans of Ghost Adventure fame. I mean, the movie was a hit, And in his usual over-the-top showmanship style, Baggins even bulldozed the house down at the end of filming for the, air quotes, safety of the public, so he claims. But alas, this tale is not about that. This is the story of the Ammons family in a house that was purported to have over 200 demons in it.
How can there be 200 demons there?
Well, according to many experts on exorcism and demonologists, when someone or something is possessed, it's not just one demon. There is a head demon, and then they have their legion with them. The legion typically consists of the lesser demons that are under the head demon's control. In other words, they are never alone.
So 200 would not be an abnormal number of demons in any case?
I think it would be abnormal. I really do. I could see 10, 20 demons maybe. But you've got to wonder if these were all demons or some were demons and some were ghosts and spirits. Mm. So we're going to try to get into that a little bit as we go here.
Okay.
This story first gained national attention after being reported by the Indianapolis Star newspaper on Sunday, January 26, 2014. As we go through this horrifying string of events, keep in mind that many of these claims were witnessed and reported not only by the family, friends, and neighbors, but also by a captain of the Gary, Indiana Police Department and Department of Child Services workers, nurses, and doctors as they investigated the family. I'm telling you this now so you will remember that even though the things you're going to hear may sound far-fetched and sometimes downright unbelievable, it definitely has a strong pedigree of eyewitnesses to these hauntings. Now, as a matter of fact, many of the events that are detailed here are also detailed in nearly 800 pages of official records obtained by the Indianapolis Star and recounted in more than a dozen interviews with police, DCS personnel, psychologists, family members, and even a Catholic priest. So, let's go to the beginning. In November of 2011, Latoya Ammons, her mother, Rosa Campbell, and her three children, then ages 7, 9, and 12, moved into a rental house located at 3860 Carolina Street in Gary, Indiana. Days after the family moved in, they claimed black flies swarmed a screened-in porch and kept returning even after the family believed they were killed. This is a little unusual this time of year in Gary, Indiana, since the average temperature of that time is 35 degrees Fahrenheit.
Don't flies try to find warmth and a place to hibernate around that time of year?
They're already hibernating that time of year. It's way too cold for them to fly.
Oh.
In 35 degrees, they're not out moving around. They're supposedly already somewhere. So that's really weird. There were other strange happenings, too. After midnight, Campbell and Ammons both said they occasionally heard steady clump of footsteps climbing the basement stairs and the creak of the door opening between the basement and the kitchen. And upon checking, no one was there, so even after they locked the door, the noises seemed to continue. Campbell said she woke one night and saw a shadowy figure of a man pacing the living room. She leaped out of bed to investigate and found large, wet boot prints. But things seemed to ramp up on March 10th, 2012, according to the family.
Is it possible for an entity to leave prints, let alone wet ones?
Absolutely, depending on the type of entity it is and the strength of it and the power it has. It sure can.
I see.
Yeah, and then at around 2 a.m., Campbell, Ammons, and her children, who would normally have been asleep, they were up because they were mourning the death of a loved one with a group of friends that night. After hearing screaming, Campbell said she ran into the bedroom where her 12-year-old granddaughter and a friend were staying. Ammons and Campbell said the 12-year-old was levitating above the bed. According to their account of events, Ammons and several others surrounded the girl, praying. Campbell said she remembers being completely terrified. I thought, what's going on? Why is this happening? Eventually, Campbell said her granddaughter descended onto the bed. The girl woke up with no memory of what happened at all. Campbell and Ammons said people were visiting that night they just abruptly left and refused to return. Ammons and Campbell didn't know what was happening, but they knew they needed some type of help, as they feared something supernatural might be going on. So they called around to various local churches, but most refused to even listen to them, let alone help. Eventually, after listening to Campbell and Ammons talk about the house and visiting it, officials at one church told them the Carolina Street house had spirits in it. They recommended the family clean the home with bleach and ammonia, then use oil to draw crosses on every door and window.
Is that normal? I thought cleansing meant using sage and some sort of chant.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Using bleach and ammonia, maybe the place was filthy. I don't know. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. But, you know, Ammons also supposedly contacted a couple of mediums who told them the home was besieged by over 200 demons and that they needed to just pack up and move. But as in most cases, this isn't a reality for a family that is cash-strapped and just making it from check to check. As a matter of fact, I think they already were behind their rent. One of the mediums then suggested that Ammons make an altar in the basement. After putting a makeshift altar together and putting a statue of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus on it, she opened a Bible to Psalms 91 and laid it on the altar. They went through the house burning sage and sulfur while repeating Psalm 91 aloud to cleanse the house. And it worked. Well, for about 3 days. Then in typical fashion, the spirits, demons, or whoever was in the house got pissed and things really started to ramp up. The family said demons possessed Ammons and her children, then ages 7, 9, and 12. The kids' eyes bulged, evil smiles crossed their faces, and their voices deepened every time it happened, Campbell and Ammons said. The youngest boy, then 7, supposedly sat in a closet talking to a boy that no one else could see. The other boy was describing what it felt like to be killed. The same 7-year-old once flew out of the bathroom as if he'd been thrown, and a headboard once smacked into Ammons' daughter, causing a wound that needed stitches. The 12-year-old would later tell mental health professionals that she sometimes felt as if she were being choked and held down so she couldn't speak or move. She said she heard a voice say she'd never see her family again and wouldn't live for another 20 minutes. Some nights, things were so bad, the family slept in a hotel just to get some peace. Some medical doctors thought, of course, they were hallucinating or completely delusional. But what happened next was detailed in the DCS report after the fact. The two boys cursed the doctor in demonic voices and were raging at him. Medical staff said the youngest boy was lifted and thrown into the wall with nobody touching him, according to the DCS report. As you hope and expect, someone called DCS and asked the agency to investigate Ammons for possible child abuse or neglect. The caller, who is not named in the DCS report, speculated that Ammons might have a mental illness, and the person believed the children were performing for Ammons, and she was encouraging their behavior. DCS family case manager Valerie Washington was asked to handle the initial investigation. She gave the following account to police and in her intake officer's report. She said, hospital personnel examined Ammons and her children and found them to be healthy and free of marks or bruises. A hospital psychiatrist evaluated Ammons, determined she was of sound mind. Washington interviewed the family in the hospital. And while she spoke with Ammons, the 7-year-old actually started growling with his teeth showing. His eyes rolled back in his head. He said the boy looked at his brother, locked his hands around his brother's throat, and refused to let go until adults pried his hands open. Later that evening, Washington and a registered nurse by the name of Willie Lee Walker brought the two boys into a small exam room for an interview, with which Campbell joined them, as they were minors, so they had to have an adult. The 7-year-old stared into his brother's eyes and began to growl again. It's time to die, the boy said in a deep, unnatural voice. I will kill you. While the youngest boy spoke, the older brother started headbutting Campbell in the stomach, at which point Campbell grabbed her grandson's hands and started praying. This next part is extremely terrifying. It rattled the witnesses and appears to actually provide some validity that this thing is paranormal. According to Washington's original DCS report, an account which was also corroborated by Walker, the nurse, the 9-year-old had a weird grin and walked backwards up a wall to the ceiling. He then flipped over Campbell, landing on his feet, yet he never let go of his grandmother's hand. He walked up the wall, flipped over her, and stood there, Walker said. There's no way he could have done that. Later, police asked Washington whether the boy had run up the wall as though performing some kind of acrobatic trick or something. No, Washington told them. She said the boy glided backwards on the floor, wall, and ceiling, according to the official police report. Of course, both of them were terrified and fled the room, and according to Washington's report, they told the doctor what happened. The doctor, of course, did not believe him and asked the boy to walk up the wall again. The boy said he didn't remember what happened and couldn't do anything, according to Washington's report. Ammons, her mother, and all of the children were separated and underwent extensive psychiatric evaluations. These turned out as one would expect in this situation, with all the educated professionals determining that even though there was no apparent psychosis, they said the children were induced into a delusional system perpetuated by the mother's religiosity, which was also supported by Campbell, the grandmother. In other words, they're making it all up. Ammons spent the night at the hospital with her 7-year-old son, while Campbell took Ammons' daughter and the older son to a relative's home in Gary. The next day was the youngest son's 8th birthday, so the DCS officials asked Campbell to bring the other children back so they could sing happy birthday and have some birthday cake. They thought that's all there was to it, but then DCS took the emergency step of taking custody of the children without a court order. All of the children were experiencing spiritual and emotional distress, which is what Washington wrote in the DCS form to take custody. At this point, you're all probably sitting back scratching your heads wondering what in the world is going on now. Has all this stopped since they took the kids away? Well, not exactly. And it appears that maybe at least one person in that hospital may have actually been paying attention to what was going on with that family. On April 20th, 2012, the hospital chaplain called Michael Magano, who had been the priest at St. Stephen Martyr Parish in Maryville for more than 10 years. Magano said he had never received a request like this one. The chaplain asked him to perform an exorcism on Ammon's 9-year-old son. But you know, folks, performing an exorcism is not straightforward, and there are definitely steps that need to be followed. So a few days later, after Sunday Mass, Magano visited Ammons and Campbell in the Carolina Street home, which was on April 22, 2012. For 2 hours, Ammons and Campbell detailed the phenomena for him. Then Campbell interrupted the interview to point out a flickering bathroom light. The flickering stopped each time Magano walked over to investigate, which he attributed to a demonic presence. And he said, "It must be scared of me." Well, at least that's what the newspaper reported later on. The interview was interrupted again when Campbell pointed out Venetian blinds in the kitchen swinging, even though there was no air current. Magano said he also saw wet footprints throughout the living room. Ammons complained about having a headache, and Magano said she convulsed when he placed a crucifix on her head. After a 4-hour interview, Magano said he was convinced the family was being tormented by demons. He said he also believed there were ghosts in the house. So Magano blessed the house before he left, praying, reading from the Bible, and sprinkling holy water in each room. He then told Ammons and Campbell to leave because it wasn't safe to be there. So they temporarily moved in with a relative. But less than a week later, the two women were definitely back at the Carolina Street home to let Washington, the DCS family case manager, check the condition of the home. Washington asked a Lake County police officer to come with her. Two other officers, one each from Gary and Hammond Police Departments, asked to join them out of professional courtesy. The kids were still in DCS custody, so they were not present during this visit. The makeshift altar Ammons had created was still in place, along with rings of salt she had poured all against the basement walls to, quote, unquote, dissuade the demons, according to the Hammond Police Department report. Austin, the Gary police captain, was one of those officers. He said he believed in ghosts and the supernatural, but said he didn't believe in demons. Austin said he changed his mind after visiting that Carolina Street house. During the interview with Campbell, one of the officers' audio recorders malfunctioned, according to Austin and Hammond Police Department records. The power light flashed to indicate the batteries were dying, even though the officer had placed fresh batteries in the recorder earlier that day. Another officer recorded audio, and when he played it back later, heard an unknown voice whisper, "Hey," according to the Lake County Police records. So it sounds like, yeah, they got themselves a nice EVP, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
The officer also took photos of the house. In one photo of the basement stairs, there was a cloudy image in the upper right-hand corner. When another officer enlarged a photo, that cloud appeared to resemble a face. Now, I'm not sure if that's pareidolia or what, but this is what they put in the Lake County Police records. The enlargement also revealed a second green image that police say looked like a female. Austin said photos he snapped with his iPhone also seemed to have strange silhouettes in them. Austin said he found himself starting to believe Ammons' claims of paranormal activity, but the mental health professionals evaluating Ammons and her children still remain completely skeptical, of course. Throughout it, Ammons and her three kids remained steadfast they were possessed and needed help. This is when DCS, in April of 2012, requested and received temporary wardship of the three kids. DCS found that Ammons had neglected her children's education by not having them in school regularly. The agency had made this same finding back in 2009, so it was easy with a repeat offense. But Ammons told Washington there were times she could not send the kids to school because the spirits would make them sick, or they would be up all night without sleep. So DCS temporarily placed her daughter and older son at St. Joseph's Carmelite House in East Chicago. Ammons' youngest son was sent to Christian Haven in Wheatfield for a psychiatric evaluation. They found nothing wrong with the boy.
While they were separated, did the children have behaved normally or like they were possessed?
Well, I know the youngest one behaved like he was possessed because it was in the psychiatric report records and evaluation. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the doctor, she reported that the kid was just faking. There's nothing real. He was just faking because he didn't want to answer her questions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's our answer on that, I guess. But, however, during this time, both the police and DCS officials continued their investigation of the house. Campbell, Ammons, Austin, and the two other police officers from the initial visit went back to the Carolina Street home on the afternoon of May 10, 2012. The police officers visited after work hours on their own time, but they were also joined by the priests Magano and Samantha Illick from the DCS, who was there actually in official capacity. Illick replaced Washington because she refused to go back, and she brought with her two Lake County officers and a police dog. Magano told police he wanted to check the dirt under the stairs for a pentagram or personal objects that might have been cursed. He said a pentagram might indicate a demonic presence and possibly a portal to hell, which is actually according to a Lake County police report. The report also said they found a pink press-on fingernail, a white pair of panties, a political shirt pin, a lid for a small cooking pan, socks with the bottoms cut off at the ankles, candy wrappers, and a heavy metal object that looked like a weight for a drapery cord buried under the stairs. I have no idea about the significance of the items they found unless they were used from some kind of curse or something. But then Magano blessed some salt, which he said is a barrier to evil, and spread it under the stairs and throughout the basement. Iliac said she was later standing in the living room with the rest of the group when her left pinky finger started to tingle and whiten. She complained it felt broken. But less than 10 minutes later, Iliac said she found and felt as if she was having a panic attack. She couldn't breathe, so she walked outside to wait for the group. When the priest started questioning Ammons inside the house, she complained of a headache and shoulder pain, according to the police records, so she joined Iliac outside. Now, here's where it gets a little weird. It appears the officers continued to walk through the home. On the main floor, they noticed an oil-like substance dripping from the Venetian blinds in the bedroom, but couldn't figure out where it was coming from, the police records actually state. To make sure Campbell or Ammons hadn't poured oil on the blinds, two of the officers used paper towels to clean it off. The officers then sealed the room for 25 minutes and stood nearby so no one could walk in. When they went back in, the oil had reappeared, according to the police records. Magano told police the liquid was actually a manifestation of a paranormal or demonic presence. Then with this info, Magano sent a report to Bishop Del Melchick, who had not authorized an exorcism in 21 years of being the bishop of the Gary Diocese. Melchick initially denied Magano's request to do a church-sanctioned exorcism. Magano said the bishop told Magano to contact other priests who have performed exorcisms. So Magano said he needed other priests to give him a ritual for a minor exorcism, which does not require church approval. The priest he consulted told him to look it up on the internet. Wow, that sounds really helpful and very Christian-like, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. That last sentence was sarcasm, by the way.
Right.
Yeah. He said he did an intense blessing on the Carolina Street home to expel the bad spirits. That same day, Magano performed a minor exorcism on Ammons. The ritual consisted of prayers, statements, and appeals to cast out the demons. Two police officers and Illick, the DCS family case manager, also attended as well.
Did it help?
A little bit, but not enough. Not enough. Illick said she left believing that something was going on, and although she wouldn't go as far as saying it was demonic, she said she got chills during the next 2 hours during that rite, and it felt like someone was in the room with them the whole time. She also reported afterwards to a newspaper interview that she had a lot of things go wrong in her life after this. And then after the minor ritual, Magnol told Ammons to look up the names of the demons that were tormenting her. Each demon has a name and personality, Magnol said. A name has power over the demon. And he planned to use those names to fight the demons during exorcisms. After the minor rite, Magano said Bishop Melchick gave him permission to exorcise Ammons. The ritual is the same as the minor exorcism, but definitely more powerful because it has the backing of the Catholic Church, Magano said. So Magano ultimately performed three major exorcisms on Ammons, two in English and the last one in Latin, in June 2012 at his Maryville church.
So you're saying the permission itself is what makes the exorcism more powerful?
It does, because the faith changes. And then also, I believe, they use different rites of exorcism that were sanctioned by the Catholic Church, which is official stuff instead of minor stuff. You know, it's a heavier rite.
I see. So,
yeah. During each exorcism, Magano said he praised God and condemned the devil. For the sake of time, we're not going to repeat any of the exorcism stuff here, as it was three separate periods of several hours each. But during this period, Ammons and Campbell moved to Indianapolis, and after the final exorcism, LaToya Ammons was finally reunited with her kids. Well, Deb, what do you think about this one?
I have questions, and it's hard not to believe there was something going on with the whole levitation and walking up walls thing. But were the exorcisms successful?
Yes, they were. They were completely successful.
I assume since they were reunited that someone of power finally believed the family?
I don't know if it's a case of they finally believed the family or there were certain steps that LaToya Ammons had to take in order to get her kids back, and they satisfied those steps with DCS. So I'm not sure if they finally believed or it was just a step she had to take.
And what purpose would bulldozing the house serve? Would that actually stop anything?
It could if it was the house itself, but knowing that it was Zach Baggins, the reason for the bulldozing was he only paid $35,000 for the house. The original landlord and people that lived there before Ammons and after Ammons all claimed to never have any paranormal activity. Baggins was supposedly physically hurt for life in his house by the demons and everything else and has to wear special prism glasses. And there's no better way to not have anybody come back behind you and prove it was false than to demolish it and not have it be there anymore. So hopefully that answered your question. Mm-hmm. But, you know, well, folks, this has been a long one, and we thank you for giving us so much of your important time. We have much respect for that. So until next time, when we discuss another tale yet to be told.
Thank you for listening, and remember to like and share the show. We would also appreciate a 5-star rating wherever possible to help new listeners find the show. We welcome all questions or comments you may have about this or any other episode, and our contact information can be found in the show notes of this episode. You can also follow us at foreverparanormal.com. And if you'd like to support us, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/foreverparanormal. The links to these are also in the show notes of this episode.